Not that I've seen, he said finally. Others you could ask, if you were overmind. Like Fulder. He looked at me. Friend of his? The old man, you mean? No, was that his name? The eelmonger grinned, showing gapped teeth. Honest man. What? Fulder doesn't have any friends, at least none from outside Wald. If you'd said yes, I'd have known you were trouble. The eelmonger eyed me up and down. Might still be, at that. Only one way to find out, I said. I'm looking for someone. So I heard. Why here? I made a show of looking around. Why not here? Folk in Wald don't often have business outside of the village. You do seem quite isolated. Backwater, you mean? The eelmonger gestured with his cleaver. I'm not from Wald, you know. Not originally. That's why I'll talk to you. And I'll tell you straight. Whoever you're looking for, don't. Go home. Let Wald keep its own. I'll take it under advisement. I looked down. The heads of the cur-eels were bouncing and snapping in their basket. Needle fangs clicked as the last vestiges of animal malice fled the cooling meat. What do you know about Evric Mann? The eelmonger hesitated, mid-blow. It was a little thing. I only noticed because I'd been expecting it. I also noticed the tattoo on his forearm. A cannon wrapped in chains. Another Ironhole alumnus. And why are you looking for him? That's my business. The eelmonger grunted. Fair enough. He scraped another head into the basket and began filleting the still wriggling body. There's no one by that name here. That's not what I asked. The eelmonger nodded. But that's my answer, regardless. He paused in his work. Take my advice, friend. Wald's no place for a fellow like you. And what sort of fellow am I? He snorted. You're a debt collector, or I'm a sister of charity. Got that look that says you know what a breaking bone sounds like. You've got a good eye. And you don't belong here. I smiled. So people keep saying. I'm not planning to set up shop. I'm just looking for Evric Mann. Is he dead, or is he alive? If he's dead, will you leave? I paused, considering the question. That depends. Is he? The eelmonger finished his task and reached for another eel. I'm tired of all the damn Gyronites, of being wet all the time. He sank his cleaver into the eel's neck. But mostly, I'm tired of eels. I want to leave here. Need money for that. And more than just a handful of comets. I pulled out the pouch I'd taken from Gint. I have more. The eelmonger looked at me. He licked his lips. He's not dead. Good to know. Where is he? I don't know, but you're not the only one looking for him. Who else? He gave a meaningful glance to the pouch. I started setting out coins. When I got to 5, I stopped. He frowned, but said, "The guards are after him." Why? He didn't reply. I set another coin down. A baron's ransom. I didn't care. Money was just a means to an end for me. If I couldn't buy something, I'd just take it. He smiled thinly, as if reading my mind. Rumor has it he tried to kill his lordship.
What?
He nodded. That was my reaction. Not like him at all, frankly.
You knew him, then?
Despite myself, I was curious. Had Mern changed in the years since we'd last seen one another? He made to speak and stopped. Froze, rather. I turned and saw Fulda standing at the entrance. The door hung open, unlatched. The old man stared at us, and then, very deliberately, turned and strode away.
"Get out," the eelmonger said, all former amiability drained from his voice.
I looked at him.
"What?" "Get out," the eelmonger hissed.
He came around the counter, cleaver raised threateningly.
"Get out of here. I can't speak to you any more. Get out. Get out."
I backed away in haste, retreating into the street. The eelmonger didn't follow. He slammed the door behind me and latched it. Fulda was waiting for me, and he wasn't alone. He had three friends with him. I recognized them as the old man's hangers-on from the tavern.
"I thought you were taking my advice," Fulda said.
"Did I say that?" I kept my hands away from my knife. None of Fulda's friends appeared to be armed, and I didn't want to commit murder if I didn't have to. It would only make things more difficult.
"It's time for you to leave. Now."
"I'm not looking for trouble."
"You found it, anyway," he said. "The god has marked you, boy. I can smell it on you."
That brought me up short. "What god do you serve?" Fulda laughed.
"The huntsman," he said. "Red Kern, the old stag. The bramble-crowned, black-shanked god of dark shadows and tall trees. He's marked you, boy, and no two ways about it. I smelled it on you the moment I sat down."
Marked me. I felt a chill, and not from the rain. Fulda nodded, baring gap teeth in an animal grin.
"I can smell his musk on you. He's pissed in the hollows of your soul."
He leaned forward.
"I'd leave if I were you. He might let you go, might let you escape, if he's feeling merciful. Sometimes the prey lives to fight another day."
"I'm no one's prey." Fulda licked his lips.
"No?"
The way he said it made me think he was laughing at me. Fulda struck me as a man who'd seen too much to believe anything that came out of anyone's mouth. He reached into his coat and produced a knife.
"We should see about that, maybe."
He glanced at his companions.
"Hold him."
His three companions moved forward. I continued running. 3-on-1 was bad odds, but there was nowhere to go. Better to make a stand. I set my feet, and when the first of them drew close enough, I struck. They hadn't expected that, and the first man went down easily enough. A strong jab to the midsection, and he was on his knees, wheezing and heaving. The other two came in hard and close after that. They were brawlers, built for tavern scuffles. They hemmed me in and pushed me back, cornering me against the eelmonger's shop. Their punches were slow but strong.
I weathered them, taking the pain the way I'd been taught. Once you learn how to take it, pain is just fuel for the fire. I caught a blow on my forearm and swept it aside, even as I slammed my foot down on the side of my opponent's knee. There was an ugly crack, and the man leaned forward, right into my palm. The blow was quick, and one broken jaw later, he was down. The remaining one took a wild swing, nearly catching me on the side of the head. I twitched aside, caught his arm, twisted, and dislocated it. It made a nice pop, and his scream was music to my ears. I stepped over the whimpering man and advanced on Fulda. The old man had a look of consternation on his face, and he backed away. This wasn't going the way he'd foreseen.
"You can fight," he said. "You'll wish you hadn't, before they're done with you."
"Who?" I said, reaching for him.
"Who do you think?"
The whinny of a horse caused us to turn, and I saw a coach rattle into the square. There were guards sitting atop it, hooded against the pelting rain. Fulda took the opportunity to scuttle away, and I let him go. The coach rolled to a stop, and the horse, pulling it, reared. The door opened, and a slim figure climbed down. She was tall and lean, dark, with curling vine-like tattoos that marked her cheeks and chin. She wasn't dressed like a farmer. Farmers didn't wear hauberks or carry swords. From what I could see, the blade was cheap, forged locally, I suspected. But it was probably sharp enough. She wore heavy gloves with iron braces and had thick, hobnailed boots, good for grabbing and stomping. A cloak was thrown over one shoulder. She tapped the pommel of her sword.
"Well, then, what have we here?"
As she spoke, the guards atop the coach stood, raising crossbows. She strode towards me.
"Disturbing the peace? Public intoxication? Pick your poison, stranger."
None of the above. I raised my hands and stepped back. She laughed and looked down at the men I'd dispatched. She whistled softly. The guards climbed down from the coach and started towards the groaning men.
"New to the village, then?" she said. "We don't get many visitors,"
she smiled.
"Might I ask your business in Wald?
Are you the sheriff?"
"Close enough," she said. "Answer my question.
Am I breaking some law by defending myself?"
"Is that what it was?"
She scratched her chin, still friendly, on the surface at least.
"Answer my question. What's your business here, other than crippling the locals?"
"I'm looking for someone." I glanced at the guards as they hauled my opponents to their feet.
"May I lower my hands?"
"No."
"Who are you looking for?"
"That's my business, I think. A private matter."
"No such thing in a place like this."
She looked around and grimaced.
"Seen bigger privies. Nicer, too."
She looked back at me.
"It'll save time if you just tell me. Maybe I can be of help. Quicker you settle your business, quicker you can be on your way."
She peered at me.
"What's your name?"
"Blackwood."
"Funny name."
"Is it?"
"Around here, it's hilarious. I'm Sepesh. I'm what passes for the law in Wald."
"Much call for that?"
"I break up fights, mostly."
She looked pointedly at me.
"And encourage uninvited elements to be about their business. The realm is vast, and there are other places to go."
Better places? For you? Her smile widened. She was enjoying herself. We can keep dancing if you like, or you can be sensible. Who are you here for?
I looked at the guards. Sepesh looked dangerous enough. The guards weren't local either.
Mercenaries, then. Mern, Everick Mern.
She raised an eyebrow.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Oh?
I'm looking for him, too.
So I hear.
Oh, from whom?
A little eel whispered it to me.
Is that so?
Her fingers tightened around the hilt of her sword.
It might be for the best if you come with me now, Blackwood. Just so we can get this all cleared up.
I considered my options. I could feel people watching from behind barred doors and windows. I could read the fear in the eyes of Fulda's companions as the guards bound their hands and shoved them roughly to the ground. Whatever they were expecting to happen now, it wasn't good.
What about them? I asked.
Sepesh shrugged.
We'll lock 'em up, teach them the error of their ways. Hear me, boys? Teach them thoroughly, huh?
The guards laughed and nodded. One of them kicked one of his captives in the hip, causing the man to groan.
Yeah, we'll teach them, Captain.
She looked at me.
See? Law and order.
She indicated the coach.
Let's go.
Lead the way.
Hoped you'd say that. She winked. Always nice when people are sensible about things, don't you agree?
The coach was old-fashioned, a box on narrow wheels, the gilt tarnished and the canvas blotched with age and damp. The horses were restive and the wrong sort for pulling coaches, as if they'd been recently pressed into service. The guard sitting atop the wagon was a familiar face. Buell. I smiled thinly as the big man glowered down at me from beneath his cloak. Sepesh caught the exchange and grinned.
You two friends?
We're acquainted, yes.
Bastard,
Buell spat and turned away. Sepesh chuckled. She gestured.
Up you get.
Chapter 11. The Manor. I watched the town stretch past in streamers of brown and grey. The coach wasn't moving fast, but even so, most of the buildings blurred. When I judged that enough time had passed, I asked the obvious question.
Where are we going?
Sepesh gave me a lazy glance.
To see his lordship.
And why does he want to see me? I wanted to ask if he'd be fully clothed this time, but I kept my comment to myself.
He doesn't, particularly, but he's also interested in your friend Mern. So I expect that he'll want to talk to you.
Sepesh stretched slightly and interlaced her fingers behind her head.
Your friend has caused a lot of trouble.
A bit of trouble can liven a place up.
And it does, but trouble has its place. It comes and it goes, and things go back to being quiet. That's the way of it, you understand?
All too well.
Care to tell me why you're looking for him?
Maybe later. She grinned at me.
Careful you don't wait too long. I'm not a patient woman.
She leaned forward.
There it is. Impressive, no?
I craned my neck and peered out the window. From a distance, the keep resembled a headstone rising from the murk. Squat, grey and lacking in all character save a dour malignity. It had seen better days and was a faded echo of what it had once been. Recent additions and extensions cluttered about its base like barnacles on a ship's hull. It looked like it had been a watchkeep once. Now it was a manor house, or the closest thing Wald had to one. A pontoon bridge, larger and sturdier than the others, stretched from the island to the main track, and there were guards patrolling its length. The bridge was protected by a simple portcullis of wooden logs lashed together, which was controlled by a winch on the other side. As the coach approached, the portcullis swung upwards with a groan of wood. Rainwater sluiced down from the logs, slapping the roof of the coach. I heard Buell curse as he got even wetter and allowed myself a small smile. "I sense some tension there," Sepesh said, indicating the roof. "Best be careful. Buell nurtures his grudges as if they were children." "So do I," she laughed. "I like you, Blackwood. I hope his lordship doesn't order me to kill you." The coach rattled as it crossed the swaying bridge. Trees rose in clumps and groves from the murky waters. I spied the crumbling remains of an old lumber mill on one of the outlying islands. It was all but swallowed by the thick copse of crooked trees that had grown up around it. Even the bridge that had once connected it to the town was all but gone, slowly disintegrating from neglect and the elements. "I take it that's of little use these days." "What?" "The lumber mill." Sepesh stirred. "Not for a century, as I recall. There's a few of them scattered about. Not much logging out here these days. Not much farming, either." She smiled. "Fishing, mostly." "Eels," I said. "Famous for our eels," she said. "Like eels, Blackwood?" "Depends on the seasoning." I studied the keep as it drew closer. The faint strains of music were audible now, and I saw lights bobbing on the water. "Is there a celebration of some sort going on?" "There's always a celebration going on this time of year," Sepesh said. "His lordship likes a party, and his friends get so easily bored out here. Not much to do but drink and hunt. I'd hate to interrupt. I can come back later." "Not to worry. He asked me to find you." I tensed. "Fair warning, I'm not going to put on a bramblehorn hide. I don't care how much he's offering." She looked at me. "What? Does his lordship sew it onto his prey himself? Or does someone do it for him?" She frowned. "Best keep those clever comments to yourself, Blackwood. His lordship isn't a man to be disrespected. Also not a man for trousers, going by what I saw." She snorted. "His lordship is a traditionalist." "And what tradition is that, exactly?" "Do you always ask so many questions?" "Only when I expect an answer." Sepesh shook her head, but didn't reply. There were more guards at the other end of the bridge. They were hard-looking men, not local bully boys, these. They were better armed as well, and carried themselves like professionals. "Expecting trouble?" I asked, as they waved the coach on. "Better to expect and never see than otherwise," Sepesh said. "Never know what might happen out here." She straightened as the coach rolled to a halt in the muddy courtyard before the keep's entrance. A handful of guards waited on the steps, leaning on halberds. They studied me with disinterest as I followed Sepesh up the steps to the main entrance. The interior of the structure held only the barest hint of what it had once been. effort had been made to hide its origins, no longer a fortress, but still a seat of power. A wide set of steps stretched up and back to a landing that ran the width of the entryway. Windows dotted its length, and trophies decorated the walls. Bog-grot headdresses, girl-iron pelts, weapons scavenged from battlefields, tattered banners from forgotten campaigns and bits of warplate. Too much of it to count. Sepesh led me upstairs. At either end of the landing, steps rose to meet double doors, which led into the manor proper. The reflection of many lights streaked the windows and painted the stones of the landing a pale brown, like dried blood. I heard muffled singing and shouts. I paused at an open window. It overlooked a walled garden. Below me I saw men and women dancing beneath a canopy of lanterns. Not one of the stately dancers of High Asia, or even the exaggerated gavottes of Verdia or Lyria. This was wilder by far, tribal. One of the partygoers blew on a flute of lacquered ivory, made from a beast's tusk. As I watched, the flautist danced and gyrated, piping out a sinuous tune as he capered. Others joined him with lutes and reed pipes, creating a shrill cacophony which evened out into a primitive rhythm that pulled at me in ways I found unnerving. It stirred a heat in me, and then doused it just as swiftly. The tempo increased, and a squealing bramble horn was dragged into the middle of the celebration by a pair of servants. When the first of the dancers drew a knife, I turned away from the window. I didn't need to see what came next. "Harvest celebration," Sepesh said, watching me, a half-smile on her face. "What's wrong? Surely a little blood doesn't bother you. The gods ask for so little, and we're obliged to give it to them. Harvest and hunt alike." "Blood's never bothered me. It's the religion I've got a problem with." Her eyes widened slightly. "That's a new one on me. I had you pegged as a Sigmarite, if I'm being honest." "I used to be. And now? I don't concern myself with gods or their doings." "Probably wise. Come on, this way." I followed Sepesh up the steps at the far end of the landing as the animal's squeals rose to a febrile pitch, and then were abruptly silenced. The music swelled, discordant and lustful. It reminded me of a stag's call. Past the double doors, the corridor was a narrow scoop of stone, lit by candles set in small glass-plated alcoves. The reflected light filled the passage, making it seem larger than it really was. Oil paintings in gilded frames lined the walls, hunting scenes or bucolic pastorals. None of it to my taste. I studied a few of them as we walked, and found something amiss about all of them, though I couldn't identify what. I was left with a vague sense that whatever I thought I'd seen was wrong, as if the artist were playing some trick. Sepesh led me past doors and offshoots to the end of the passage, where another set of double doors awaited. She gestured to a small bench. "Wait here." I sat without argument. It was all for show. I recognized the signs. I suspected that there was no purpose to this meeting other than entertainment, and the more patience I showed, the sooner it would be over. I leaned back, not quite relaxing. I could feel the music echoing through the stones. It tugged at the edges of my perception like moth wings, whispering and plucking at me. trying to get my attention. But the more I tried to ignore it, the more persistent it became. I also thought I could hear something moving in the walls. Rats, maybe. It was beginning to get on my nerves when the doors opened. I looked up, and Sepesh gestured. "Come in. Lord Wald will see you now." The chamber beyond was brightly lit by both a crackling fire and several lanterns hanging from hooks strewn about in almost haphazard fashion. Tall shelves lined the walls, and several cushioned benches were arrayed about the fire. A desk sat near the towering windows, and a man stood beside it, looking out into the gloaming. Sepesh coughed politely.
"Your name is Blackwood,"
he laughed. It was a low, throaty sound, like the rumble of a gurlion.
"A good name."
"I've always thought so."
"Unusual as well. Verdian?"
"No." He frowned slightly.
"You are not from Gyron, then?"
"No."
"Ah, well, no matter. We are none of us perfect."
He looked at Sepesh.
"You may go, dear Sepesh, but await my call."
Sepesh bowed, a mocking half-smile on her face, and backed out of the library. She closed the doors behind her as she went. I looked around. I'd seen larger libraries, but it was big enough to be impressive, if you found quantity imposing. There were books everywhere, crammed onto the rough-hewn shelves in haphazard fashion. The air smelled faintly of mildew and neglect. The books were for show, and probably weren't moved much. Lord Wald didn't strike me as the scholarly type. More an outdoorsman. I cleared my throat.
"Have I done something wrong, then, my lord?" "I don't know. Have you?"
Lord Wald said, smiling slightly.
"Forgive me, a little joke. You are a stranger here, in a place where we do not often see new faces. I was curious earlier when we met, but otherwise occupied. Now I am not, you understand?"
"I do, my lord."
"Good, good. You are from the city?" Lord Wald asked. "The fastness?"
"Yes, my lord." Outside, the music swelled. I could hear the celebrants shouting something that might have been a name. Only it wasn't the name I expected. Then maybe I hadn't been paying close enough attention. My eyes strayed to the corner near the fireplace, where there sat a statue carved from bone. It reminded me of a crouching gurlion, with the head of a man and the antlers of a stag. One of the first things you learned when you took the azure were the names of the known gods. Some of them were easier to remember than others. This was one of them. Kernoth, the hunter. If the Lady of Leaves was the Queen of Gyron, then Kernoth was its king, or at least a prince of no small standing. He was also a god of bloody hunts and black forests. The Lady of Leaves was the mistress of life in all its forms. Her paramour was more restrained. He was master of all that was red in tooth and claw, of life that preyed on other life. Lord Wald followed my gaze.
"Kernoth, the huntsman, the old stag."
That last name sent a spike of something through me. Fulda had mentioned that name. And the Sylvaneth. If Lord Wald noticed my sudden discomfort, he said nothing.
"He was worshipped across Gyron in the days before the Everqueen awoke from her bower and tamed the Jade Kingdoms. Another old god discarded in favor of the new."
"Not entirely, it seems," he smirked.
No, some of us remember our debts.
I wasn't in the mood for this.
Why am I here, my lord?
He laughed.
Right to the point, then.
He pointed to the table. There was a pouch there, and it looked like it was full of comets.
You are a sellsword. There is your retainer. You work for me now.
I looked at the pouch, but didn't touch it. I think I'd recall agreeing to that. Lord Wald's smile widened. It wasn't a friendly expression at all, more like a gerwolf's snarl.
Everyone in this canton serves me, one way or another.
I'm not here looking for work, just an old friend. He nodded in a way that said he didn't believe me in the least.
And does this friend have a name? I know everyone in my fiefdom. I'm very meticulous that way.
His smile thinned, and I could tell he was losing patience. I decided to play it straight.
Mern, Evric Mern.
The smile vanished.
I know Mern, he said slowly. I know him very well indeed.
No one else seems to, I said. Lord Wald laughed.
No, they wouldn't, if they know what's good for them.
He turned back to the window.
As far as they're concerned, he's dead.
Is he?
I'm not certain, but I'd dearly love to know.
Why? He didn't turn around.
Because he tried to kill me.
That brought me up short. It was confirmation of what the eelmonger had told me. And though the Mern I remembered was a lot of things, he wasn't the sort to try and kill a landed lord. Not without good cause. But I didn't say that. What I said was,
what happened?
He pushed back the edge of his robes and scratched his bare stomach. For the first time I noticed the wheel of pink scar tissue stretching across his abdomen. Someone had tried to open his lordship's belly, but hadn't finished the job. That was more like man. Sloppy.
Context is unnecessary. All that matters is that he tried to kill me, and I would like to see him hang. I have that right, I think.
Now he looked at me.
I might also hang you.
There was a wild light in his eye that I didn't like. Lord Wald wasn't the sort to make idle threats. He was really considering it. I met his gaze.
That'd be a mistake, I said carefully.
I had to play it smart, or I'd be meeting my maker much sooner than I hoped.
Why?
I didn't come to renew old bonds. My hand fell to my knife.
I came to sever them.
His smile came creeping back, slow and sharp.
How fortuitous.
For both of us, I replied. He laughed, like I'd said something funny.
Yes.
He went to the table and scooped up the pouch.
Sepesh is a killer, not a hunter, and she's an outsider. She has no experience with the common folk, being of royal blood.
I'm an outsider as well.
But they're frightened of her, not of you.
He tossed me the pouch, and I caught it without thinking.
As I said, a retainer. You will be my huntsman. Find Mern. Bring him to me. If you can bring him alive, I will double what is in that pouch.
And if I can't?
Then bring me his head.
The pouch was heavier than I'd thought, enough to see me through a few months in the fastness at least. At that moment, it didn't even matter to me that I had only Lord Wald's word that Mern had tried to kill him. I put the pouch away and nodded. I can do that. Excellent, said Lord Wald. His smile was back to its former width. You will find me a considerate master, Blackwood. I reward my followers generously. He turned back to the fire. You may go. It took me a moment to realize I'd been dismissed. When I closed the doors behind me, I found Sepesh waiting for me in the corridor. Staying for dinner? She asked. Not tonight. Take me back to the village. Do I look like a coachman? I shrugged. Then point me in the right direction. I'll walk. She frowned. Not safe to be walking around here after dark. Neither is the city. I think I can handle myself. It was her turn to shrug. Your life, your choice. But don't say I didn't warn you. Chapter 12. The Old Mill. The guards who opened the inner gate watched me as I drew close without so much as a stern glance. Sepesh had ensured that they'd give me no trouble as I crossed the pontoon bridge, or so she'd claimed. Even so, one of them stopped me. He was an older man, craggy and lantern-jawed. "You're sure about walking back?" he asked in a rusty voice. "Unless you're planning to carry me?" He frowned. He looked nervous. They all did. Like they'd seen something, or heard something. "There's Treakin abroad tonight. Keep to the path, and they'll leave you be. It's a bridge. It's not like there's many places to go." "Even so," he said, "we're not opening this gate again until morning. Just so long as you open it now." They did, cranking the winch and causing the palisade gate to swing wide. I walked through and onto the bridge. It swayed slightly, and I pulled my coat tighter about me as I pressed into the teeth of the rain. I could hear the timbers groaning beneath my feet, like a heartbeat. Creak, thump, creak, thump. The gate slammed shut behind me, and the only light was from the lanterns strung along the support beams. Their glow was weak and watery, but it was enough to make my way along. To either side of me the swamp crouched in silence, observant and patient. I met the blind glare of the trees with one of my own. Hunting horns sounded somewhere close by. The mist was rising, but I could see the dim, bobbing glow of lanterns and hear the whinnying of horses. His lordship was off on another hunt. I didn't know whether to wish him success or not. The walk was long. I could see the lights of the town in the distance, despite the rain in my eyes. I thought about the warm tavern and wondered whether there were rooms. If not, it wouldn't be the first time I'd slept in a stable. The bridge creaked and groaned. I didn't hear the sound until I was almost halfway across. It was a steady thud, 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 the sound of great hooves striking the muddy timbers. I couldn't say how long they'd been following me, but they were closer than I liked. My hand fell to my knife, and I wanted to draw it, to turn, to face whatever was coming towards me across that narrow expanse. But I didn't. The same beast urge that wanted to fight kept me moving. Fight or flight. Hunter or hunted. It had kept me alive for longer than I could remember, that urge. Kept me fighting, kept me in motion when other men might have dropped dead. But I didn't run, either. Running just meant I'd probably die tired.
So I started walking again, through the rain, and it followed, only a few steps behind. I could feel its breath wash across me, like a hot, wet wind. It wanted me to turn around, so I didn't. Horan. I didn't stop. My name, the name I'd given myself, quivered through me like a drumbeat. Horan. I bowed my head and hunched my shoulders. It plodded along in my wake, and I could see its shadow in the glow of the lanterns hung from the struts of the bridge. Two great spiked arcs stretched before me, surmounting my own shadow head like a crown. Horan. Suddenly, running seemed like a good idea. I broke into a sprint, aiming myself at the distant gate and the torches that burned there. If I could reach it, well, I didn't know. Maybe nothing. Maybe the guards would just watch as whatever it was tore me to pieces, or maybe they'd help me. At least I'd be in the light. For the moment, that was all the motivation I needed. It galloped after me, shaking the bridge, causing the timbers to bow and flex. It let loose an awful bellow, a bugling cry, at once as shrill as cracking ice, and as deep as the rumble of an avalanche. The force of it sent me skidding and tumbling like a leaf in the wind, and I found myself sliding towards the edge of the bridge. I snatched my knife loose and stabbed it down, trying to anchor myself as something dark and as vast as the peaks of Akshi barreled after me. Something, a hoof maybe, slammed down, and the timbers burst and I fell away, into the cold waters below. I went under, just for a moment. Through the water's haze, I saw my pursuer backlit by the lantern light. It was too big to be a stag, and its head was the wrong shape. I struck out, swimming away from the apparition. It was big enough to simply step off the bridge and into the water, and I didn't intend to wait around for it to do so. But where to go? Panic gripped me. There were lights in the swamp, maybe lanterns, maybe a barge or a skiff. I started towards them, swimming for all I was worth. It wasn't easy. I'd never been a natural swimmer, and the water felt like it was mostly mud. When I finally floundered onto semi-solid ground, panting and half-drowned, I found myself near the old lumber mill I'd spied earlier. I realized that the lights I'd seen weren't lanterns at all, but hag lights, dancing across the hummocks and low boughs, twisting and turning like spores in the breeze. They drew close, their sickly radiance washing over everything, revealing that my sanctuary was not the only one of its kind. Drowned remnants stretched in all directions around me. The old mill slumped in an untrustworthy fashion and was half sunk, but it was better than nothing. I waded towards it through the reeds, carefully navigating the detritus of the old timber stacks left to rot in the rising waters. I felt unidentifiable objects roll beneath my feet and thought of skulls browning in the muck. The bugling call came again, echoing over the swamp. It sounded angry, frustrated. Night birds took flight, shrieking. I reached out, grabbed a broken board, and hauled myself up onto the creaking floor of the mill. The building was mostly moss and rot, but it would serve long enough for me to catch my breath. The bridge was empty when I looked back. I leaned against a broken timber, breathing heavily, trying to think, but failing. I was content with survival for the moment, I was tired, as well as wet and cold. I realized that I hadn't slept since I'd passed out aboard Deschler's skiff. I looked around. There was a tree growing through the floor and slowly shoving the walls and ceiling aside. It was an old thing, fat and heavy with swollen boughs and serpentine roots. It had burst through the back and filled the rear of the mill. I bit back a laugh. A tree growing in a lumber mill. It was like a joke. I wasn't the only one to think so. Outside the shack, something tittered. I saw nothing, but I could hear the scrape of brambles and branches across the outside of the structure, too deliberate to be the wind. Something pale flashed past me, moving swiftly through the waters outside. I jerked back. Again the soft tittering, like sharp rain on metal. I heard something moving through the water now, all around. Stay on the path. That was what the guard had said. Well, too late for that now. I reached for my knife. I wondered if I could make it to town from here. I wondered if they'd let me. I didn't think so. The warped boards beneath me began to twitch. Water burbled up between the cracks. It was hard to see in the gloom, but I thought something was trying to reach up through the floor.
You left the path.
I looked around, trying to find the owner of the voice. Who's there? I stumbled as a board cracked. The shack swayed in an alarming fashion. It wasn't stable, and the movement beneath it was making things worse.
You shouldn't have left the path, the voice croaked. That is the first rule, the oldest rule. You shouldn't have left the path.
Tell me something I don't know. I turned, knife in hand, squinting into the gloom. Better yet, come out and do it face to face.
He said you'd come. Sent your name a-whispering down the roots and along the boughs. Said, don't you hurt him. He's mine.
A rattling laugh.
Some of us don't listen well, though, especially to him, old beast, old broken thing. Why should he have you all to himself?
Come out where I can see you, and we'll discuss it. It was a woman's voice, I thought. Only no woman had ever sounded like that without swallowing a throatful of broken glass first. I promise I'm friendly.
If you were friendly, you wouldn't be here.
That brought me up short. Should I come to you, then? I said. You might not like it if I do. I'd never cut a woman who wasn't trying to cut me first. In the church, you learned quickly that a determined woman will kill you just as dead as a man. And it was one of the few lessons I'd retained. I took a step, and the boards flexed like something alive. The rattling laugh came again, slip-sliding over the air. Something else came with it, like the scrape of broken branches over rocks, the creak of a falling tree. Water shifted, splashed and dripped as something stretched up out of the dark and leaned towards me. She was old, I think. Hard to tell with her sort. As she stretched into the light, I saw why she'd been so slow to move. She'd grown into the body of the mill. Her roots threaded through the walls and the floor and stretched up to the sagging roof. She, the she who was talking, was just an extension, like the figurehead of a ship's prow, jutting from the body of the great tree that was slowly subsuming the structure. She undulated through the air towards me with much crackling and popping, bark face twisting into what might have been a smile. But all I saw was a slash of splinters and the sap that leaked out as she spoke.
"I'll take my chances," she said.
She circled me, branches and root feelers running with mock gentleness across my arms and shoulders. I wanted to move, to run, but I stayed still. If she wanted to talk, fine. It was preferable to the alternative. "What do you want?" I asked.
"You killed one of us,"
she murmured. Her voice was rough and soft all at the same time, a parody of a mother's coo.
"How did it feel to end the life of something old when you were not yet born? Did you enjoy it?"
"A bit. Given that it was trying to kill me, I think I'm allowed." She laughed, and the sound made me flinch.
"I enjoy it as well. The scream and squirm of meat in our boughs and brambles as we squeeze and twist. It is a shame you belong to another, or I might indulge myself. It has been so long since I have watered my roots in blood. I grow stiff in this place."
"Maybe you should leave." Claws of bark settled on my shoulders in a matronly gesture.
"Maybe. Or maybe you should go. This place is not for you."
She leaned close, so close I could smell the sap. It had a curdled sweetness to it that made my guts give an agonized lurch.
"It has never been for you."
Her splinter teeth clicked just beside my ear. An old story, the oldest in Gyron. Men went where they were not wanted and cast down the first inhabitants, the trees. They cut and pulled and uprooted, scourging the land with iron and fire, and the land fought back with tremors and water. "But you let them stay," I said.
"They used to offer up their young to us as a sign of good faith, sweet, soft blood to nourish our seeds and pods in their sleep of seasons. How could we refuse? Blood to keep the water at bay, blood to buy peace."
A claw traced my cheek, scratching it.
"Blood for the harvest. Blood for the hunt."
I clapped a hand to my face and stepped forward.
"What will you give us to help you escape?"
"Escape what?" I growled. My hand was sticky and my jaw hurt. I wondered if she'd cut me to the bone. She laughed again. It sounded less like a person's laugh every time. She was putting on a good show, but it wouldn't last long.
"Him, of course. The one who marked you. He thinks like meat, that one. Old and wild and savage. We are fierce, but he is fiercer still. Even diminished. He circles you, just beyond the gleam of your fire, waiting, watching."
She swayed towards me, a serpentine shape in the gloom.
we could help you, if you like, if you ask us.
Why?
Because it amuses us. Because he is a demanding old beast and refuses to keep to his place. She planted him here so that he might slumber. And what did your kind do but wake him up and feed him and make him think that he could again be what he was?
I didn't understand any of it, but I could tell she was getting agitated. Who is he? Her face drew close to mine, too close, and the sickly sweet stink of her enveloped me.
The old stag of the woods. Can you smell him, meat? Can you smell his musk on this place? With every drop of red, he grows stronger. Soon he might burst the bonds she set on him, and gallop free of his bower to rut and ravage as he did in time out of mind. Then you will know true fear. We merely hate you, but he loves you, and that is infinitely worse.
Outside, the Sylvaneth began to laugh and hiss. Her claws traced sap across my face and chest, and my stomach heaved, giving up the fight even as it began. I suddenly felt as if someone had taken a scour brush to my insides, and I vomited up the contents of my stomach onto the rotting boards. I wondered if Deschler had been right about the venom. I wiped my mouth, feeling shakier than I liked. I hauled myself to my feet, conscious of the weak boards beneath me, and the water tugging at my ankles.
"Is this supposed to impress me?" I said hoarsely.
I gripped my knife and wondered if I could get it into her before she tore me apart.
"What do you want?"
Clawed hands burst through the floorboards before she could answer. They caught at my legs and coat, and I was wrenched downwards with convulsive force. Water.